This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here this afternoon as we cover a lot of different topics of interest around Douglas County. We wanted to focus on the city of Sutherland today, where it seems like a lot is happening. We have the mayor, Michelle Sumner, and city manager, Jerry Gilliam. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, I guess...
I lost a bet, by the way. You introduced her first.
Well, she is the elected official.
Yeah, she is.
So, okay. Oh, boy, it's going to be a tough half hour. I can see this now. It seems like there's a lot going on out in Sutherland, and my understanding right now is that you guys are the fastest growing area of the county. Is that right?
We believe so.
I think so.
So let's start with the Ford's Pond project, and because there's other things to get to as well. And we've talked about it numerous times over the last couple, 3 years, really seeing that evolve. I was out there last Sunday, a week ago, and you could see a lot of work that's been going on with the playground equipment and other things.
Yeah, definitely. Ford's Pond is a great area for people to come walk their dogs, take walks around the park. We are in the final phase for Ford's Pond with the playground. It's one of those natural playgrounds, universal for all children.
Inclusive
playground, yes. And it was supposed to be done by November. However, we did run into a few little hiccups with the weather and some delays in the equipment. So I believe it should be done by the first of the year at this point.
Well, I could tell they were in the midst of quite a few different things. And that really, I mean, I hadn't been out there since some point in the summer. Mm-hmm. And that really kind of changed the look of things a lot.
Yes, definitely.
And I also saw what I'm guessing was some trail work going on across the pond.
Yes, we're finishing up the second half of the loop all the way around. And we've also included, I believe, 3 trails up and the west end of the park up into the hillside with some trailheads. You can have signage up there for you to hike up through the forested area.
So, Jerry, get real close to the mic there. When this is all done, then going completely around Ford's Pond, how long will that be?
How long will it be done?
It's
about 1.9 miles.
Okay.
Interestingly, I will embellish a little bit on what the mayor had said. Holdup was Corps of Engineers who held it up almost, over a month, doing some assessment. And essentially the assessment is that the portion of trail that needs to be done is going to have to be kind of a boardwalk, and it has to be raised up above what is identified wetlands. Mm. So that's what's holding that up, and we expect to have that done by next spring.
So if you've got a raised boardwalk, can you pave on top of that, or is it just going to be like wood slats? Or
they haven't told me yet.
Hmm. So that might be.
I assume it'll be a hard surface, though, of some sort.
That'll make it interesting.
Once
you get it all done, and it's open to the public and all that, I will come out and do 13 rotations through there to get a marathon in.
That'd be great.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that's
we actually hope that the area schools use it for cross country and special events just for that purpose.
And talk about the aspect, too, of the fact that it's kind of become like a tourism thing. I mean, when I was out there, I saw vehicles from, you could tell they were from not Sutherland, just based on some of the decals on cars. And it sounds like people are coming from a lot of different areas to check it out.
Yeah, when we first started this process, it was basically the Housemans, Jim and Beth and myself, the three of us really just moved forward in our own unique way. I had to bring government to the table, and they needed to bring volunteers and a nonprofit orientation to the table. But one of the things they told me early on is that this Ford's Pond has the most diverse bird habitat environment on the West Coast. And so people that know that come here and kind of started off that way, and it's just grown from there.
Well, and I know the Audubon folks have talked about really liking it out there, and it sounds like they're planning some things, especially as things evolve out there. Talk about this public-private partnership idea. When this really got going, it was interesting to watch, but as I started to check some things out around the state, I found that it was more common for some bigger projects to get done this way, when you've got a city government or a county government working with a nonprofit, because you're able to latch onto different funding streams that each other can't get to, yet when you combine them together, suddenly it moves a lot faster.
Well, you said it's, I don't need to say anything else. That's exactly right. And Jim and Beth have grants that they've applied for through the Friends of Fort's Pond, and we've applied for recreational trails money and parks money, and the combination of the two has worked out to be a wonderful success.
Talk about the importance of those state park grants.
Well, it wouldn't be what it is today if we didn't have them. It's just that simple.
But a lot of work sometimes goes into putting those proposals together, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. Brian Elliott, our community development director, who just recently retired, at one point in time, we thought he was a full-time grant writer, just like Jim and Beth are on their side of the coin. And it works out. In fact, we're wanting to apply for another grant, and they won't let us because we've been given too many. We have to close one or two of them out before we can go for another grant.
And do you see down the road, is this the final phase, or are there other things that you're looking at adding later?
Well, right now, this is the final phase of what we've planned. I believe there are some additional things down the road that we might like to do, like possibly a boat ramp. But right now, this is the final phase of what the big plan is for Fort's Pond.
And back up, just remind people, if they don't know, how different this area used to look like a decade ago.
It was a log pond, so you can use your imagination for that compared to now. When we originally looked at doing that, it was actually the director of state DEQ who sent me an email strongly suggesting we look at Fort's Pond. And so... for those of you who don't know, Lone Rock Timber owned it, and Toby Luther and I negotiated almost 3 years in order to come to a mutual accord as to what we wanted to pay for it and do it. But going back from then, they were actually looking at doing a residential subdivision around it and making it kind of a high-end gated community. And, you know, not for nothing, I think what we've done is added tremendous value to the community far above whatever that would have been.
Interesting. Well, other things that have been going on out there in recent years, what kind of tie into this report that you sent over, talk more about this urban renewal report, or is that the right word I'm using for it?
Yes.
So talk more about what some of the things are that are mentioned in there.
Well, when you create an urban renewal district, it's tax increment financing. It doesn't raise taxes. It just redirects a portion of the current taxes to fund certain projects that you identify within a specific report. So we're required to provide an annual report. We're in our second year, but generally tax increment financing, it just grows incrementally from year to year. You normally can't really even do any projects till about year five. But what we did is we saw the need after we had so much tremendous success with doing Central Avenue and Fort's Pond getting started and the Splash Park and the Christmas lights and the all new regenerated downtown. We had reached a point of momentum is that we can't let that stop. We've got to be doing something. So the Urban Renewal Task Force and the City Council and the Urban Renewal Board agreed to accept a loan from the city with interest to kickstart some projects. And so this report outlines the storefront remodeling project that we did. We give people grants up to a maximum $50,000 to fix up the front. You've seen that with the fitness shop owned by Terry Brock and Bugalin Heights, and then the new Web Tracks, which is just east of Central Park. We've got the liquor store and the Rotary Room and State Farm and other businesses wanting to remodel their storefronts. And that wouldn't be happening if we hadn't drawn down some of those monies to do that. And so it's really served as an impetus at pushing enthusiasm for a rejuvenated downtown.
All right, we're going to talk more about that when we come back. The interview podcast after one at 541radio.com. 1246 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248. Lars Larson coming at 1. Brian Prowitz from the Umpqua Economic Development Partnership on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County. We're talking with the City of Sutherland Manager Jerry Gilliam and Mayor Michelle Sumner about a lot of different things going on in Sutherland. Jerry, do you feel like there's kind of a different mood in Sutherland that maybe that you've experienced in some other cities just in terms of the level of cooperation between business and government and organizations?
Yeah, that's true. That's well said. I don't know what more to add to it. I think the thing that we really strive to do is continue to kind of be on the edge of doing innovative and creative things. But that is also supported, you know, we have 250 homes right now platted and scheduled for construction. And so that helps feed into that positivity when we're looking to bring a grocery store or add more retail or bring in a traded sector job. They see more population means more workforce. More workforce means more customers.
Now, are these houses, is that one development or is that multiple developments spread around?
Four developments spread around the city. And I think when you're talking about how our city, kind of the environment, I think our city is a little bit ahead of its time. I think we really think about the people around, the things like our Hastings Village and how our people are treated. We have a place for the houseless people to go. We make it so that our downtown looks appealing, and we treat everybody fairly. And with our housing, our new housing developments coming in, we want to have enough housing for all of our community. We're hoping that the houses that come in will be all different price range affordability for several different people, whether it be people that are just starting to work, for people on fixed incomes, for people that may be moving out of houselessness. And so I think that's great for our community and something that is different than a lot of communities.
And Jerry, how many houses did you say?
240.
So that translates to, you know, easily 500 people, most likely, if not more, when you've got families, maybe several hundred people. Suddenly, you're literally growing the city.
Yeah, it's a mechanism of growing, but we need to be smart about it as well. Reckless development means poor quality of life, and we want to make sure it's great, because at the end of the day, residential taxes don't generally pay for the cost of government. You don't get enough money from that. So you need other forms of commercial, industrial, and other forms of development that supplement and help us pay the bills. So we watch that all the time. But at the same time, you know, more homes right now from where we are is good overall for a workforce. Having employees I mean, more people coming here when we're trying to attract a company and they look at these things happening, they say, okay, we can get some employees here. And not only that, it's such a great quality of life. We know that the people we do bring here will want to live here.
Well, and with the housing shortage really everywhere to a greater extent here, it's been really a challenge in the Umpqua Valley for people to find houses in different price points. Sometimes the market's loaded one way more than another based on what's available. And in a lot of areas of the county, there haven't been as much development of housing in several years, which it may help you if your house value is staying up there, even though the rest of the market maybe isn't as positive. But it's really been a struggle for people trying to find a place to live. And the reality has been that there have been folks recruited to the Umpqua Valley that I'm aware of that ended up turning down jobs because they couldn't find a house that fit their life.
Exactly.
Tell them about our project.
The workforce project? Mm-hmm. So we are in the process of starting what's called a workforce project, where we are looking for a piece of property where we will be building what's called a workforce property, which is going to involve kind of three different types of property. It will involve tiny homes, it will involve townhomes, it will involve single family homes, which will include, you know, three different levels of affordable housing for people. It will include workforce housing, so that employers that work have employees in our community can actually maybe reserve property in this workforce housing for their employees that work for them, so that they actually have houses that are affordable for their employees that are coming in. It also has affordable housing for maybe people coming out of houselessness, or maybe that people that are on fixed income that can afford it, intermixed with single family homes. And so all different income levels can afford houses in this environment. And they're all mixed together with a park in the middle, possibly, dog walk areas, it all in a community.
So we stole this, not stole it, but the governor's task force created a task force to encourage cities to stop focusing in the idea of just low-income housing. But we need to have housing where when somebody wants to go to work for the school district, like you mentioned earlier, can afford to pay the rent or buy a home. So we're working with the governor's task force. They've adopted us. We're doing our first meeting with them on Thursday, coming up with ideas, concepts, and monies to help subsidize the cost of development to the degree that we can have housing from all the way people are living up on the hill, all the way down to people who want to live in a regular subdivision in downtown. So working on all those things, and I'm really excited the mayor and Councilor Lisa Woods both have jumped on board and are part of that task force, and we're going to see where that goes.
Well, it sounds like probably a pretty long-term project then.
Yes.
Do you have any idea how long it'll take to get from where you are now to, you know, actual building?
Well, what I would normally say, we should get started tomorrow afternoon. But obviously that's too early. But after our first meeting, we'll know more.
All right. A lot of things going on in Sevelin. And Mayor Michelle Sebner and City Manager Jerry Gilliam, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
1250 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening. listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.